With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. My guest today is Ian Davis. Ian is an independent journalist, researcher, and author who publishes frequently at his website, iandavis.com, as well as at unlimitedhangout.com, offguardian.org, and ukcolumn.org. His most recent book is Pseudopandemic, New Normal Technocracy. Ian, welcome back. I hope all is well with you, all things considered.
Yes, I'm very well, thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me back. I'm fine, all things considered.
Good. Good to hear. Good to know. So once again, there are spurious claims or allegations of anti-Semitism being thrown at a British politician. For those who aren't aware, what is happening this time around?
Well, it was Conservative MP Andrew Bridgen who made a statement in the House of Commons questioning the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. What followed after that was, quite clearly in a sustained attack on Bridgen. First, they looked at some of his conduct around declaration of conflicts of interest and so forth. But Bridgen kind of held his own and continued to question publicly on public platforms such as Twitter, the safety and efficacy of the COVID jabs. He then put out a tweet which read, and this is a direct quote, "As one consultant cardiologist said to me, this is the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust." That led to, they were already gunning for him quite clearly for questioning the jabs, basically. And that led to a response from the leadership of the Conservative Party and the former Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, who basically accused Bridgen of anti-Semitism. Now, there was nothing, that could be construed in any sense as anti-Semitic in Bridgen's comment and what he posted on Twitter. And it was that particular post on Twitter that led to the accusations of anti-Semitism levelled against him. But quite clearly, Bridgen, what that wasn't the issue for those that were pursuing Bridgen. The issue was his questioning of the COVID jabs. So they misused, in effect, anti-Semitism. People like Hancock and Sunak misused anti-Semitism in order to make or score political points. And my argument in the article, which I know that we're going to go on to discuss, which I wrote for UK Column, it is time to stand up to those who can taught the meaning of anti-Semitism, is that in doing so, what they were effectively doing was ignoring the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. That's the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition, which is the working definition adopted internationally. They completely ignored that. They also ignored really the sentiment that Bridgen was expressing and tried to downplay it. Because quite clearly in his tweet, he said, potentially, he was told by a Jewish scientist, medical scientist. He hasn't named that person yet. But certainly the tweet included a reference from a Professor Gertzgau at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. So it wasn't Professor Gertzgau, because Professor Gertzgau is not a medical scientist, but nonetheless, you know, he was citing a reference from a Jewish scholar, and therefore the use of the term Holocaust, as Bridgen used it, was appropriate, because he was saying this is potentially the biggest health, you know, the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust. He wasn't denying the Holocaust in any way, shape or form whatsoever. He wasn't downplaying it. He wasn't belittling it. On the contrary, he was trying to point out that what is happening now is potentially on that kind of scale and of that severity and of that import. That was the whole point of what he said. But his detractors misused the meaning of, you know, the very important social meaning that we give to terms like Holocaust and anti-Semitism. And in doing so, they belittled and undermined the social significance of those terms purely to defend, in this case, pharmaceutical corporations.
Yes. And it was a sight to behold Matt Hancock standing up in Parliament and asking for Prime Minister unelect Rishi Sunak's agreement with Hancock's accusation of Bridgen as an anti-Semite, as being an anti-Semite, of his words as being anti-Semitic. And it's especially a sight to behold because Matt Hancock is responsible for the deaths of thousands, if not tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in the UK, particularly through the use of midazolam and morphine on the end of life pathway, as it's called, for those who are diagnosed, in inverted commas, with COVID-19. He is responsible for the implementation of that protocol, and he's still walking free and labeling a member of parliament who dares to call out the truth, who dares to call out reality, as an anti-Semite. And in my observation, bringing the attack against those who speak out against the COVID-19 operation, particularly the injections, to a whole new level, because it's not a far leap between labeling somebody anti-Semitic and labeling somebody an extremist or a terrorist. And so I don't think that this is accidental. I'm speculating here, but it seems to be a planned ratcheting up of the rhetoric against those who dare question the lethality, the toxicity and lethality of the COVID-19 injections.
Yeah, and I think there's a clear trajectory there of associating these terms. I mean, obviously, anti-Semitism, it holds a place in the lexicon of our culture, because, as it does, because it is supposed to signify, you know, the most horrific of all kind of, you know, abuse of power. I mean, it couldn't be worse. We're talking about something of horrific dimensions and, you know, one of the worst episodes in human history. I mean, you need to go back to people like Genghis Khan and for similar kinds of atrocities. And, you know, I mean, obviously there have been other atrocities of that ilk, but rightly, you know, the term anti-Semitism has importance and meaning in our language, and Bridgen used it appropriately. Bridgen wasn't misusing it. Bridgen was using it quite you know, deliberately, I would imagine, in his tweet, to try to express to people that all we know at the moment is that people are dying having been given these jabs. There's no doubt about that. The evidence is clear. There have been, I mean, even, you know, in the UK, which is, you know, from a political and social, you know, and you could even argue cultural perspective, has done everything it possibly can to completely ignore the harm being caused. Even in the UK, there are now numerous inquiries that have looked into deaths that have proven beyond any shadow of doubt that the person died as a result of receiving one of the jabs. So there's no doubt that people are being killed by it. If we then look at the mortality statistics, there is also no doubt that people are dying in extraordinarily high and unusual numbers. We only need to look in the UK. We can look at the Office of National Statistics for those figures. We're talking thousands, 1,500, 2,000 people a week, more than we would normally expect, are dying currently in the UK, and those deaths are not associated with COVID-19. So there is a reason that these people are dying, and there are many multiple factors that are contributing to that. Then, and this is a pattern that is repeated globally. You see the same statistics in the US, the same in France, the same in Germany. This is global. Everywhere where the vaccine rollout occurred, these excess deaths are occurring. We also know that the jabs have been given to an estimated 5.5 billion people. So even if a tiny percentage of those people die as a result of receiving the jabs, we are most definitely looking at something on the scale of the Holocaust. On the scale of the Holocaust, I'm not saying it's deliberate, as clearly the Holocaust was, but you have to say that the warning signs were there right from the beginning. There were many scientists around the world, people like Dr. Sukrit Bhakti and people like that, who were warning that the design of these jabs is unusual, to put it mildly, and that the focus on the S-spike protein is a strange protein to select for a jab, an mRNA jab, or for a viral vector jab. This is an odd thing to choose. So we don't know how many people have been killed by these jabs. We don't know whether it was done deliberately or not, but it is entirely reasonable to suspect that we could be, as was suggested by Bridgen, looking at something that is the worst crime against humanity since the Holocaust. There's no argument that may not be the case. We don't know. That's the point. And then unless governments around the world are willing to investigate these things, which none of them are, not one, then it is a perfectly reasonable thing to say. It's not outrageous by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's not. And when you look at the IHRA's working definition of anti-Semitism, which is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed hatred toward Jews, rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. When you look at that working definition, which, as you said earlier, is essentially the accepted definition on a global scale, again, there's nothing that Bridgen said in his tweet that fits that definition whatsoever. It doesn't even come close. I wish he didn't delete that tweet, though, because he did, and he said he did because people were offended by it. I wish he hadn't done that, but nonetheless, the point still stands that he did not make an anti-Semitic remark or observation. And this, as I alluded to earlier, sets this, as I alluded to earlier, I believe is setting a precedent for criticism of or resistance to this worldwide injection campaign, which is still ongoing. Unbelievably, I would say, but nothing's unbelievable to me anymore.
No, and I mean, when you think that they're giving without, so this is, I think this is the important thing to know. I mean, when we talk about whether something is deliberate or certainly criminally negligent, you might argue, we know for a fact that very little has been, well, nothing, I'm not going to say very little, nothing has been done to investigate at an official level. We don't know what's gone on unofficially, but at an official level, nothing has been done to investigate A, the huge number of excess deaths that we're seeing, and B, the, you know, the potential harm that is being caused by these jabs. Nothing has been done. At the same time, nations like the US and the UK are surging ahead, and other countries as well are surging ahead with giving these jabs to children and to infants, babies. Now, there's just absolutely there is no excuse for doing that in light of the evidence that we are aware of. Now, this,
and that's something that Bridgen pointed out as well.
Yeah, there's no excuse. We don't know the whole point of this issue, and the reason that Bridgen raised the issue as it is, as he did, is that we don't know. That's the point. We don't know. They're just sticking these jabs in kids, and they have no idea whether they are in fact safe and effective. None whatsoever. All the evidence would seem to suggest reasons for significant concern, and medical professionals and scientists and epidemiologists and statisticians from across the world have been trying to point this out for more than a year. And no government anywhere is doing anything about it, but they do want to inject children. Now that, how do you describe that? I mean, is it, you could say that's criminal negligence, but that sounds, you know, there is not unreasonable to suspect that there is something darker behind that, because I mean, that is just negligence to the point of lunacy.
It's premeditated murder.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to say if you know that people are being killed by them, but you don't know how many, and you don't know how they're being killed by them, which supposedly they don't, although why they don't, I don't know, because there's plenty of scientists around the world that are demonstrating pathologist reports that are demonstrating precisely the mechanisms by which the jabs are killing people.
Mm-hmm.
How they can not know that, you know, that's the argument, isn't it, that they don't know. But I mean, I guess that's because you'll never know if you completely ignore all the evidence. I mean, it's easy not to know something if you refuse to look at the evidence, which is what is happening, to then go and inject children with that sludge is yeah, I mean, you can only think it is murderous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. Beyond negligence.
And if you argue from within their narrative, if you look at it from within their narrative, and I'm framing it this way because SARS-CoV-2 has never been isolated. It's never been proven to exist. And thus COVID-19, the disease it allegedly causes, has never been proven to exist. If you look at the WHO's official definition of a COVID-19 case, It's a positive PCR test. That's its definition. There's no distinct symptomology or pathology with regard to COVID-19 in inverted commas. It's a positive PCR test. But if you argue from within the narrative that SARS-CoV-2 is a virus that transmits between people and causes the disease COVID-19, and you look at the statistics that have been churned out by people like John Ioannidis, for example, at Stanford University, the risk of so-called COVID-19 to infants is nil. And again, I'm arguing from within their narrative. I don't think there is any risk at all, because I don't think it's there based on the research I've done, the evidence that's available. But again, even if you argue from within the official narrative, the one that people like Rishi Sunak and Matt Hancock and those in corporate media who stand behind them dutifully subscribe to, there is no risk and therefore no reason for infants or anybody, no matter what age, even if you're talking about the elderly, to have this serum jabbed into their bodies. And that's information that's available for anybody to find very easily. The Ioannidis group recently came out with a new peer-reviewed study that reworked the statistics, the risk statistics, the so-called infection fatality rate. And it's essentially nil for every age demographic. And unless these people and the media are completely not paying attention and just walling that off absolutely, there's no way they cannot know about this. And this isn't new data. This has been there from the beginning. If you go to the Oxford risk calculator, you can find this very easily. And that's been around since the beginning of the COVID-19 operation. So this is just one example, but there are so many examples like this that point to what I argue is the fact that this is premeditated murder. And anybody now who points this out is open to being labeled anti-Semitic, because the precedent's been set. And as you write in the UK column article, the politicians, the critical politicians like Sunak and Hancock and the corporate media, what they've done essentially is insist that the questioning of pharmaceutical corporations is linked to some kind of radicalization process. This despite the fact that there is no evidential basis for any of their claims about so-called radicalization. So I can't say this enough. This is a clear attempt to ratchet up anybody who questions not just the injections, I would say, but the COVID-19 narrative, to ratchet up the framing of them as extremists or terrorists or something of the like. And here in the US, that fits perfectly into what the Biden administration especially has been trying to push into reality, which is persecution of domestic violent extremists. And this isn't exclusive to the US. The UK, the EU, they all have similar agendas that essentially boil down to shutting down viciously any dissent from the prevailing narrative.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, this process has been ongoing for a while. It's something else that I've written about quite a bit. And I think another thing as well is that it distracts from, you know, the real issues that people are trying to debate. In this case, bridging obviously was trying to debate, you know, the questionable safety and efficacy of the so-called COVID jabs. And I think it's important to highlight what some kind of formative researchers have said about this. So in Professor Anthony Sutton in Wall Street in the Bolshevik Revolution, where he demonstrated that basically the Bolshevik Revolution was heavily financed by Western financiers, particularly Wall Street. He said, quote, "The persistence with which the Jewish conspiracy myth has been pushed suggests it may well be a deliberate device to divert attention away from the real issues and the real causes. The evidence provided in this book suggests that the New York bankers, who were also Jewish and had relatively minor roles in supporting the Bolsheviks, while the New York bankers, who were also Gentiles, i.e. the Morgans, Rockefeller and Thompson, had major roles. What better way to divert attention from the real operators than by the medieval bogeyman of anti-Semitism?" End quote. Now, this narrative,
and you quote. Sorry, I was just going to say quickly. You quoted that in an article you wrote in 2018 on your website, "Anti-Semitism: Thought Disorder as a Control Mechanism." I just want to point that out because, again, these allegations, these accusations of anti-Semitism are not new, and they're used to stifle all kinds of dissent. And in this article, you were pointing out how the charge of anti-Semitism is thrown at people who criticize the international banking cartel, but now we're seeing it applied to people who criticize, in part, the international pharmaceutical or biotech cartel. And I'd say in part because I think there are many moving parts to this COVID-19 operation. This is a big one, but you can't now say anything negative about this cartel without risking being labeled an anti-Semite.
Yeah, and that is the point. I mean, how can people that question, say, international finance, or people that question the efficacy and safety of a vaccine, or people that question the political aspirations of a political leader in the UK, or all of these people, according to people like Sunak and Hancock, are all anti-Semites. They're all basing their criticisms upon anti-Semitism. And the reason that they use to justify it is that some people who are being criticized happen to be Jewish. It doesn't matter whether or not you've actually made any specific criticism about them for being Jewish or alleging, you know, as some people do. I mean, let's be clear, some people do allege that there is some sort of Jewish plot to enslave humanity. I mean, you're always going to get people that are genuinely anti-Semitic, but that doesn't mean that everybody that questions these things, such as bridging or people that might criticize international financial systems, are anti-Semitic. But the people like Sunak and Hancock that use that term to silence critics and to marginalize and to ensure basically that wider public attention isn't drawn to what they are actually saying, which is the real reason they use it, that they are completely and utterly abusing the term. They are showing absolutely no respect for what anti-Semitism actually means. You could argue, and I'm not going to say, and I'm certainly not going to turn it on its head and accuse people like Hancock of being anti-Semitic, because I've got no reason to think that he is. But by abusing the term as he did, he's certainly not showing any respect for the people who lost their lives in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't care, I think. The thing to think about that is that he doesn't care. He doesn't think about it deeply enough to even question his own morality about why he is using terms like that, what the purpose mm-hmm. is, how he is misusing it. He couldn't care less. That doesn't mean he's anti-Semitic. No. It just means he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. When you use the term that flippantly, that obviously, in such an obviously flippant manner, you don't care about what the term actually means and what the implications of your using it against somebody are. But he could possibly be charged, and I don't mean legally, but in a argument sense, with Holocaust distortion, which the IHRA, as you point out in your UK column article, describes as either intentionally or inadvertently excusing, minimizing, or misrepresenting the known historical record of the Holocaust. And that's in part what he's doing, because this is ascribing to anti-Semitism, which is derived from the Holocaust, something that has nothing to do with genuine anti-Semitism or what happened during the Holocaust at all. It's injecting, no pun intended, a whole new definition into the term, into the accusation. And what's even more ironic, or what's ironic, there's a lot of irony here, but one of the things I find very ironic is that if you go to the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's website, ushmm.org, you can find a small passage about Nazi propaganda about the ghettos, specifically the Warsaw Ghetto. And I'll just read this short passage. A recurrent theme in Nazi anti-Semitic propaganda was that Jews spread diseases. To prevent non-Jews from attempting to enter the ghettos and from seeing the condition of daily life there for themselves, German authorities posted quarantine signs at the entrances, warning of the danger of contagious disease. Since inadequate sanitation and water supplies coupled with starvation rations quickly undermined the health of the Jews in the ghettos, these warnings became a self-fulfilling prophecy as typhus and other infectious diseases ravaged ghetto populations. Nazi propaganda utilized these man-made epidemics to justify isolating the, quote, filthy, unquote, Jews from the larger population. So the people who are throwing around the term anti-Semitic toward people like Andrew Bridgen are the same people who've been leveling accusations against those who are either opposed to the COVID-19 injections or opposed to vaccinations, so-called vaccinations across the board. They've been labeling them for how long now as disease vectors or potential disease vectors, engaging in almost the same kind of rhetoric that the Nazis engaged in when they were confining Jews to the Warsaw Ghetto, as I just read. So the irony there cannot be overlooked.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's worth pointing out what Vera Sharav, the Holocaust survivor, said about the Holocaust and how it came into being. And she said, quote, "The Holocaust did not begin in the gas chambers of Auschwitz and Treblinka. The stage was set by fear-mongering and hate-mongering propaganda. If we are to avert another Holocaust, we must identify ominous current parallels before they poison the fabric of society." Now, if we think about the way that the Holocaust, the way that people that have declined the jabs have been treated by the mainstream media and by the political class and by, some members of society, And there's a passage that I put in the article, and all of this, so in each of these kind of statements about what happened to people, I've linked directly to the, you know, the source material that supports what was said. So, and the passage says, calling people who decline the jabs refuseniks, accusing them of lying, denying them employment opportunities, refusing the unjabbed access to public spaces and services, calling those who don't want to be injected baby killers, and ultimately casting the obvious hatred as terror, the obvious objects of your hatred as terrorist extremists in order to justify the use of violence against them. Now that, All of those statements are linked to articles in the mainstream media that are still available that make precisely those allegations. Now, mm-hmm. as Vera Sharav said, you know, we need to recognize the ominous signs of this kind of mindset, because ultimately what was, you know, behind the Holocaust was a warped mindset and a willingness to obey. Those were the two things that culminated in to such horrific effect. And now we are seeing, and she is quite right, and she was talking about that this time, I mean, she was talking about the jabs. And she said, at this time, the threat of genocide is global in scale. This time, instead of Zyklon B gas, the weapon of mass destructions are genetically engineered, injectable bioweapons masquerading as vaccines. Now, whether or not she is right about that, the evidence seems to suggest that she may well be. You know, we need to find out. We need to know whether she is right or not. I mean, what kind of reasonable human being wouldn't want to know whether she is right or not, given the evidence that we have in front of us? And it seems that, well, nobody in government does. Nobody in the mainstream media does. Nobody in, you know, any kind of official capacity in the regulators or any of that. They don't want to know. They're not interested. I mean, it is... You know, why we can't compare that precisely, as she has done, someone that lived through that horror, is warning us. She is warning us that the same is happening again, and we're ignoring it because it's politically expedient to do so. And you are quite right that the intention is to use terms like, I mean, how often now are we hearing about far right extremists are the people that question the jabs. The link between the far right extremism and potentially terrorism, which of course is why they want to use the anti-Semitism label, because that is almost, it's almost a given that if you can get the anti-Semitism label to stick, no matter how unjustified or illegitimate that is, if you can get it to stick, then to the people that you want to marginalize, then the rest of society will perceive them as far right extremists, because the two go hand in hand. And that's the point. Mm-hmm. That is what they are trying to achieve. Not only that, I mean, in the UK and in the US and elsewhere around the world, in France and Germany and so forth, they've put legislation in place to enable that association to be made. They're actively pursuing the idea of, I mean, in the UK, we've recently had the Online Harms Bill, where they have had to backpedal somewhat on the idea of harm that isn't necessarily illegal, but still causes harm mm-hmm. to adults. Now, they've had to backpedal on that somewhat. There's been a kickback against that. But they'll just reword it and get it refitted into this, you know, totally opaque and impenetrable legislation that they've already said will just be the framework for legislation, which will then, the meat and bones of it will be put into the act after it is passed using secondary legislation. So they'll just squeeze it through however they can and then use secondary legislation, which doesn't have hardly any parliamentary scrutiny at all. They'll use that to put flesh on the bones of their draconian, you know, you can only say dictatorial policy. So you know, we are facing, something else I've written about before is we are facing globally the rollout of a dictatorship, and people really need to wake up and get their head around the fact that this is being rolled out in front of our very eyes. And the only people that are speaking up and warning the public about this are attacked as anti-Semites, far-right extremist terrorists. That people have just got to get a grip, I think. And it seems to be more and more people are realizing that something isn't wrong, that something is wrong. I mean, the uptake for the boosters is pitiful. I mean, we're talking sort of 10% or less. No one's interested. I think everyone has realized that the situation, there's something very, very wrong with the situation. But what are people going to do about it? They're just going to carry on and supporting the same old political parties, voting for the next globalist leader that will be installed, no matter who they vote for. I mean, unless we start seriously thinking about addressing some of these issues, the fact that we are ruled by, well, you know, we're just ruled by a genuine global cartel of power interests. You know, that's it. There isn't any democratic accountability or any of that. Forget it. So, you know, we need tackling that.
And even the states, the leaders, and their media representatives that are often held out to us as alternatives or as resistance are, the depiction of them does not square with reality. RT, for example, recently did a report on the CDC's non-investigation into the signals it was supposedly paying attention to, the safety signals coming from VAERS and other US databases with regard to so-called adverse events. And I say non-investigation because it was less than 24 hours between when the CDC said it was going to investigate and when it announced that even though it had detected signals, it found no correlation of significance. Essentially, everything's fine. The injections are fine. Keep getting them. RT did a segment on this and brought up Andrew Bridgen and his tweet. And Steve Sweeney, whom you may or may not be familiar with, called Bridgen's tweet crass. And I just think this is what's being held out to us as resistance media or alternative media standing up against the so-called unipolar world and its agendas. It's the exact same agenda, the exact same narrative. It's just repackaged a little bit. And if you think that what Bridgen tweeted is crass and you can't see the truth in it, then I think you're helpless and hopeless. But all of that to say that this is not something that's isolated to the US, to the UK, to Canada, to the EU. It's happening in Russia. It's happening in China. It's happening in India. Donny Rancour, the ex-professor, the PhD from Canada, and his new group, the name of which I'll have to look up to get it right, but they just did a correlation study about the injection rollout in India in early 2021, when it was claimed that the so-called Delta wave was killing people in mass. And he and his colleagues found a huge correlation between the rollout of the injections and the deaths of approximately 3.5 million people in India. And this is the I in BRICS, one of the pillars of the so-called multipolar New World Order. And we have very likely mass murder at the hands of these injections that's taken place there and is still taking place. And Russia's Sputnik V is so safe and effective that it doesn't even have a safety monitoring system anymore. So it's, as you said, it's global. And that's something, as you said, I fully agree. We really need to get our heads around that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing a piece on the moment. Nikolai Patrushev made a sort of a public statement on the morning of, I think it was the 10th of January, which was followed up by comments by in the UK by Elwood, who's 77th Brigade, which is the Lieutenant Colonel, which is a information warfare unit of the British Army, who basically agreed with him and said, yeah, Russia, it's a proxy war, you know, which is exactly what Patrushev said. And then about 2 hours later, Elwood agreed with him wholeheartedly, which was a unprecedented admission from. So anyway, I've got a future piece coming up shortly about what I'm calling the Patrushev oversight. And in that, one of the things that that Patrushev criticized was he was claiming that, you know, that only the West uses propaganda to what he calls the zombification of the population. And it's the West have done this and only the West does this. The propaganda that the Russians deployed in support of Sputnik V and later for newer jabs that they've got rolling out at the moment. They've got, is it Covasol or something like that? It's unbelievable. I mean, you had the deputy of, so this is Patrushev's deputy, Yuri Kopov. He said during COVID-19 that ISIS and Al-Qaeda were deliberately infecting the population with COVID-19. He said that the people that were casting aspersions about the jabs and questioning the safety of the Sputnik V on social media were linked to terrorist organizations. So it's the same, you know, it's exactly the same use of, I would argue, and something that I know that some excellent writers at UK Column, Dr. Bruce Scott in particular, has written a series on what he's called menticide, explaining what menticide is. UK Column, you know, this misuse, and something that UK Column have talked about for a long time, actually, this misuse of applied psychology, this use of fear to make people bend their behavior to your will based upon, well, nothing, not based upon science. The only scientific genuine use of science that we saw really coming from the political establishment on East and West during the what I call the pseudo pandemic was they were really, you know, they got their act together with applied psychology, that's for sure. They really knew what they were doing there. But as for actual genuine you know, epidemiology, as Ioannidis and Newt Witkowski, who was censored off the internet practically at the start of the pseudo pandemic, said point blank that if you apply what, you know, the lockdown restrictions, and if you do this, you will make the situation worse. It will lead to more deaths, not fewer. And for saying that, I mean, this is the guy who originally defined the R number. He's undoubtedly one of the world's leading epidemiologists. And Ioannidis is the most published epidemiologist in the world. So we didn't listen to them. That our governments completely ignored people like that. And instead listen to people like Neil Ferguson, who hasn't got a medical degree of any kind, and doesn't right. is and not people, an epidemiologist.
People like Christian Drosten and Victor Korman, who essentially concocted the PCR test that was widely used around the world to come up with cases. And it was based on garbage information that went in and thus spewed out garbage information, just like Neil Ferguson's predictive models. And just to hammer home the applied psychology and the global reach of the narrative, again, to RT, and I point out RT because it is a media outfit that is very obviously directed at disaffected Westerners to get them on board with the multipolar camp, as it were. And they published an opinion piece last week. Moderna wants to quadruple the price of its COVID-19 vaccine as hundreds die per day. And the first three paragraphs read like this: with the US federal government's stock of vaccines for residents running out, Moderna now plans to raise the cost of its vaccine from $26 to up to $130 in a decision that understandably has Americans pissed. One of those leading the charge against this obvious price gouging has been independent US Senator Bernie Sanders, who notes, in addition to the fact that U.S. taxpayers bankrolled the entire research and development of the vaccine to the tune of $1.7 billion and guaranteed billions of dollars in sales figures across the world, is the fact that it only costs $2.85 to produce a single dose. It shows the unbridled greed of Big Pharma and the U.S. capitalist class in general, who are willing to price out poor and working class Americans from a potentially life-saving drug. This is especially pronounced when the country is stuck in a virtual case plateau, where tens of thousands are hospitalized a week and hundreds are dying every day, which is obviously contributing to declining U.S. life expectancy. And it goes on for many more paragraphs with the same garbage, but that's the narrative that's coming from the so-called multipolar world, that democide should be more equitable, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, and as pointed out by Riley Wagaman recently, RT during the pseudo pandemic called anyone that questioned the vaccines an enemy of the people. So I mean. You know, I struggle to find anything of any kind of value, really, in the so-called opposition that is coming to the globalist order that is being rolled out. I mean, it's not called the globalist order, I don't think, for a bad reason. I mean, I think we can call it the globalist order because it is global. You know, it's happening across the world simultaneously. There is no opposition. There is no this idea that there's somewhere, you know, somewhere in the East, they're standing up against central bank digital currency, or they're standing up against biometric, digital ID, or they're not standing up against any of it. They're leading on most of it. I mean, it's ridiculous to suggest that somehow they're going to save us all from the worst excesses of the lunacy of the World Economic Forum. Why not spend a bit of time looking at what the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum are talking about? Because I'm telling you now, it's the same stuff. It's the same.
Yes, it is. Yes, or take a visit to the Russian Central Bank's website and see what they're talking about with regard to CBDC or ESG. It's exactly what you'll find in on the websites of Western central banks. So, again, something we really need to get our heads around. And you and I have talked about this many times, but we still need to keep hammering it home, because a lot of people are still under the spell that we're going to be saved by people who, whether they're in the West or whether they're in the East, only seek to oppress us, and they have nothing good in store for us. It's up to us to make the future that we want. And if we look for heroes in any of these so-called leaders, we're going to be in for the rudest of awakenings. So, Ian, I'll just end by saying that we need to keep speaking out despite whatever threats or accusations might come our way. And I think that you'd agree with me on that.
No, absolutely, mate. Yeah, just keep speaking out and just, you know, saying, you know, just highlight the evidence where you see it. And hopefully we can talk about the evidence and not talk about who's saying what, but rather talk about the evidence.
Yes. I agree. Well, thank you again for joining me, and I look forward to speaking again soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it, mate. All the best.
Take care.